did he respect Claude Hopkins' work that you know of?
Absolutely. Of course.
I don't know if I told you this. I have what I believe is one of the largest collection of original Claude Hopkins advertisements, about 60 of his original print ads.
Really? Didn't know that.
But we have a website where we sell it. It's called ClaudeHopkinsAdvertising.com. And I had a researcher search all the microfilm of all the newspapers back from those ages, and we pulled up and referenced and compared it with his story in My Life in Advertising in his other book, trying to match up what he talks about in My Life in Advertising and Scientific Advertising, and came up with all his car ads, like 5 different ads from Schlitz, the Rio, and everything he talks about in his book. It's a great collection.
You sell a product that reproduces these?
Yep, I sell a product. It's a 100% digital product. They've all been scanned in. They're in a PDF format, so there's a sales letter up on www.ClaudeHopkinsAdvertising.com that tells the story and describes a little bit about Claude Hopkins, and we had a joint venture partner who wrote a study guide that goes over all the philosophies of what Claude taught, and then you use the ad examples to follow along. It's a nice little product.
I'm going to go check that out right after this phone call.
Okay.
And in fact, I'm writing right now, ClaudeHopkinsAdvertising.com.
I'll email you the link. You can download it.
Oh, okay, yeah, do that.
Now, it's a pretty hefty file. You're on a dial-up, but the PDF is quite large, so you may want to just be forewarned. It may take a while to download, but you'll get it. Okay?
Great, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so he respected Claude Hopkins, Albert Lasker, obviously a great ad man and closely associated with Hopkins. Hopkins headed up his agency for so long.
Yeah.
Okay, and Walter Gill Scott. Anyone else were mentors of him?
My dad got into this back around 1919 or thereabouts. A lot of these people were about that same era. During the years, as time went on, he was an admirer of David Ogilvy. Another one, of course, John Caples.
Okay.
Incidentally, I don't know if you know, but I'm fortunate enough to have one of my ads in a couple of Caples books.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, which book?
Well, I know it's in Money Making Advertising.
Okay. And which ad was it?
It's a little real estate ad.
All right.
The real estate ad, just a classified ad, is called Neglected Junior Estate.
Okay.
That's also in my dad's course.
Okay. How'd that come about?
I don't know.
You don't know how it got it?
I don't know how it got in Caples' book.
Okay.
That ad has been in a book put out by the leading real estate guy in Australia. It's been reproduced everywhere. Yeah, that's part of my ancient past life. But Caples is another one that my dad was very simpatico with.
All right, let's get into, at 42, your dad wrote the advertising classic, How to Write Advertising That Sells.
In 1942.
Yeah, so that was after the war bond experience.
Well, it was probably right about that time.
Okay, so how did this How to Write Advertising That Sells come about?
Well, the interesting thing is my dad never graduated from college, and yet he was invited to be a guest lecturer on writing advertising copy at Northwestern University School of Commerce.
Where is Northwestern located?
The university is in Evanston, Illinois, but they had a school of commerce. I'm sure they still do, or the name is a little different. They had a downtown campus in downtown Chicago, and he taught an evening course there on copywriting, which is pretty amazing for a guy who never even got out of college. But he discovered that there were no books that really covered copywriting in an academic way, in a systematic way, and so he decided to write one, which he did, and that's how to Write Advertising That Sells came into being. Then later on, a second edition was produced in the 1950s. It was used in that college class, in quite a few others, but it also became, again, a McGraw-Hill business bestseller through a number of printings, and was purchased and used by people in advertising agencies, companies, mail order, and was, and I think probably still is, the most complete book on how to think about copy, organize your material, and write advertising that really does sell of any book out there now or then, ever, really. And there are a lot of great books on advertising, but in terms of a systematic approach to from where you start to getting the final ad that sells, I believe this is 600 pages, so it is extremely thorough.
Okay. It says Clyde was the first person named to the Retail Advertising Hall of Fame.
That organization still exists, by the way. The Retail Advertising Conference is the name of the organization. And it was started by a fellow and his wife in Chicago, Ralph and Harriet Heineman. they ran a first-rate art service for retailers, and they got the idea of bringing leading advertising practitioners to be a faculty for a conference, which they would invite advertisers to pony up money and attend. And this retail advertising conference became, and still is, a very important organization amongst retail advertisers. And at some point, they decided we ought to honor somebody every year and start a Hall of Fame, like the Baseball Hall of Fame or something like that. Their director said, okay, that sounds like a great idea. Who are we going to put in as our first one? And they came up with a list of several luminaries. There was a man named Ken Good who had written a book on retail advertising.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Bernice Fitzgibbons, who is probably the best-known retail advertising manager ever. She was the Gimbel's or Macy's, I believe. There was M. Seclemian, who was a great rival of my father's. He was a graphics person. He'd been advertising manager of Montgomery Ward's, a great retail advertising consultant. They were bitter rivals for years, and in the later years of their life became fast and best friends.
What made them rivals?
Well, Seclemian was a terrific speaker. He's a little bitty guy with a deep bass voice like this, and a tremendous speaker, good writer, but almost exclusively oriented toward the art and the graphics end.
I see.
And Clyde was, of course, very much of the copy and the selling side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And they would sometimes be on the same programs and irritate each other. But anyway, Seclemian deservedly was a very prominent consultant and widely recognized. And Clyde was widely recognized, having been at Marshall Field's and the fair and the author of this book. And I can't remember right offhand whether there was another individual or not. But anyway, they sent out to all of the members, stores of this retail advertising conference, like a ballot, which is the one that should be the first one. And Clyde got more votes than all the rest of them combined. So he was the first person elected to be a member of the Retail Advertising Hall of Fame.
What's the Nicholas Cup?
I don't know if that exists anymore.
I have here, it's a tribute to persons having made the greatest contribution to advertising education, that your dad was awarded that, the National Retail Merchandise Association.
You know, that was awarded by the honorary fraternity for advertising people in universities, and they did give that to whoever had made the greatest contribution to advertising education. As I know, he did get recognized for that.
Here's some for you. What was the first professional fee Clyde ever received for over $25,000?
That would have been the classified ad writer that he developed and sold to Ford Motor Company. Incidentally, talking of copywriting, the big trade journal today is, and for many years, Advertising Age, for which Clyde wrote a column for many years. There was another, for a long time, very popular trade magazine called Printers, Inc. In there, the publisher of Printers, Inc. called Clyde among the top 10 copywriters in the country and nowhere near the bottom of that list. So he was not only a great teacher, but a practitioner. He was not saying, I can't do it, so I'll write about it. He actually did it and systematized it and wrote about it.
Did he love teaching?
He did. He loved to share his knowledge, and nothing made him happier than a student or somebody that followed his method successfully. And he became good personal friends with many of his successful students.
And then in 1965, he published his now legendary marketing training course, Advertising Mastery, or How to Convert White Space into Advertising That Sells. How did this come about?
Well, earlier he had developed this course right after the war, World War II. Around 1946, that was sold at a very high price, including personal services, to newspapers and department stores.
You know how much, ballpark?
Well, I have copies of the contracts, and it varied by newspapers, depending on circulation, and department stores by the number of people in their advertising department.
Well, you got to give me an example of one.
Well, to make it meaningful, we'd have to convert it into today's dollars.
Okay.
But back in, say, you know, 46, 47, 48, if I remember, the typical contract ran only in the neighborhood of $6,000, $7,000. But you jump that forward to today, and you're talking some pretty serious money.
So a newspaper publisher would pay, in today's term, maybe, let's say, $20,000.
Oh, way more than that. It would be, I'm guessing, in terms of the dollar today and the dollar back then, it's probably 10 to 15 to 20 times more now.
Okay, so a newspaper would pay possibly 10 to 20 times the amount of an average contract, maybe being around $6,000 back in those days. And they would get this course that he developed.
But it was a course on advertising itself. Then, in the early 60s, the newspapers were struggling a little bit, and he developed the idea for a briefer course. It's called a short course in advertising itself. And he wanted to get it into more hands, so he sold the concept to what was then the Newspaper Advertising Executives Association, later became the International Newspaper Advertising Executive Association. And I think later on they threw the word marketing into it. But anyway, they would sponsor it and make it available to all of their members.
Did they pay him a fee to create it?
No.
They did not?
He got their commitment to do it. Then he actually created it and created the marketing materials, most of them, and then they sold it to hundreds of newspapers across the United States and Canada. And of course, the idea was each staff member of the sales staff would get a copy. So if paper had 30 sales staffers, they would buy 30 plus copy for the executive, the copy for the assistant advertising manager, maybe for the classified and so on. So there were quite a few copies sold. Clyde had the right to print up extra copies to do with as he chose in other areas. So he did print up extra copies for his own personal use.
Tell me the story of the Rusty Staples. What is that, and what does it have to do with this course?
It has to do with not the actual copies that went to the newspapers, but the ones that he had the overruns printed for himself. They're printed in Chicago, and he had the extra copies stored. The printer was to warehouse them. And unbeknownst to my father, the printer moved them from the warehouse adjacent to his plant or something to some other location. Meanwhile, my father was never one that likes to do the same thing over and over again. And he'd finish one project, and then he was basically off to do something else. So he never did develop a real plan to market the extra courses that he had had printed. They were just there. Then he moved on to other things. So they sat there. And meanwhile, he had moved to Northern California. I was in Santa Barbara. After a while, my dad, the house in Northern California was bigger than he and my mom wanted, and they came down to Santa Barbara with the idea that he and I would somehow get involved in business together. Meanwhile, these extra courses had been sitting in a warehouse in Chicago. So in Santa Barbara, we found some inexpensive place that we could store the courses and arrange to have them shipped to Santa Barbara. And we were going to figure out then how to do something with them. They arrived and got unpacked and nicely stacked up in the warehouse here in Santa Barbara, and we went to get some boxes and open them. And we discovered that the staples, now, you realize it's not just one big bound book. There were 14 different manuals, 11 by 14 inches in size. Each of these 14 manuals, which contained a total of 15 lessons, were saddle stitched. And the staples had turned rusty and left rust marks on these courses.
Okay.
And so he says, well, I refuse to let anything go out under my name that isn't in perfect condition. This is not up to my standards. Well, just think about it. And then they languished a little bit, and he got in touch with the printer. And the printer, I don't remember all the details, but said, oh, well, it's not my fault. I put them in sold that division where that warehouse was, and somebody else has them and got nothing to do with me or something like that. So they got the person under whose auspices they were stored, and there was a good deal of talk about a lawsuit being filed. And the guy said, we can see your point of view. We don't want to see a lawsuit. That wouldn't fix the ones you've got, and it would be bad for us. We wouldn't like that. Tell you what, at this point, this printer had bought some high-speed offset presses and was doing printing for a number of local weekly papers into the suburbs around Chicago. So we've got these new presses, and how about if we, in training our people on the presses, we reprint these courses at no charge to you. You keep the bad ones with the rust, and we'll also replace at no cost and give you a whole new set of these new ones. My dad said, okay, that's fine. So that's what they did. Those were done and shipped out to California. So now we had the ones with the rusty staples and then the new replacement copy.
So the rusty staples, these were in different parts. Each part had a staple in it.
Each part was saddle stitched, had, I think, about two or three staples down the binding edge. But meanwhile, my dad and I had talked about maybe we could sell the rusty ones overseas or something. We'd put a stamp on them or a sticker that said that these were damaged and cannot be sold as new but are for export only or something like that. And we did sell some like that into Australia and Great Britain.
Okay.
But my dad refused to allow them to be sold in this country. Well, at some point, Jay Abraham became aware of these. I had met Jay before, and we talked and exchanged some ideas, and he was vaguely aware of these courses. But then at some point, one of his associates had heard about them and said, gee, you know, we teach the importance of the old masters, of classics, and so on, and wonder if Barry still has any of those courses. And they got in touch with me, and I said, yeah, and sent him some. And we both agreed we didn't want to send anything out with those rusty staples. So Jay's people got busy and decided that, gee, if we trimmed off the bindings with the staples and the rust marks on the paper and packaged them up, maybe put a little new material in the front, a nice cover, maybe a nice coil binding, our clients would love to have these. There's a lot of material in there not available anywhere else, and it's really timeless. And I thought that was a terrific idea.
So the ones he bound were the original ones with the rusty staples?
That had been trimmed off. That's right. And they thought the name How to Convert White Space into Advertising itself made a lot of sense to the newspaper people that had originally been created for, but to a broad range of entrepreneurs, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And so they wanted to rename it, and I came up with the name of Advertising Mastery. And then the subtitle, I don't have a copy in front of me. Do you have a copy in front of you right now?
Yeah, I do.
What is the subtitle?
Hold on, let me flip it open here. Advertising Mastery, the time-tested, perfected, and practical advertising system proven to slash costs, multiply results, and optimize profits for every business, product, service, and profession.
Right. Well, I wrote that, by the way, and to indicate that it is for a very broad range of interests. In other words, if you're interested in really understanding what makes advertising work, and have confidence that you can do it all the time, this is invaluable material. The Abraham people thought that was a great subtitle, and so they embossed it in gold in a leatherette type of cover, and this all happened sort of at the same time. So, but, you know, we're used to selling high-priced packages. We want to make this a bigger package. What about that How to Write Advertising That Sells book? I said, well, that's been out of print. McGraw-Hill finally let it go out of print, but I have the rights to that, the copyright, and they said, well, why not reprint that and include it also? And I said, I think that's a terrific idea. I get requests for that and don't have anything to sell them, and they sell for quite a bit of money. I've seen them advertised on eBay and on Amazon for really substantial amount of money. So Jay says, well, we'll print up some as a test. This is before the whole package is marketed. And so he had a local printer print some up in the same size as the original, the standard 6x9 or whatever. And well, they liked that idea. And so it was reprinted in hardcover 6x9 with the same sort of burgundy cover, foil stamped in gold. And that was packaged with the Advertising Mastery course. And that was the package that he and his associates sold under the Advertising Mastery title.
So when Jay promoted them, did you get some feedback from the people who bought the course and the book?
Yeah, a bunch of testimonials came directly to me. It was very well received.
Tell me about the index in this course.
All right. The course, the way we have it available now, is as originally produced, not the ones with rusty staples, but the ones that were printed up to compensate for those.
Okay.
Under the title, How to Convert White Space into Advertising That Sells, there are 14 8.5x11 manuals, each in two colors. And the last one is a double lesson. Parts 14 and 15 are combined into one manual. And it's a double-sized one. It includes, at the back, an index. The index is a topical index, like you look under benefits, or you look under carrying conviction, and things like that, and it's very useful. But as we thought about marketing it to a broader range of people, we thought, gee, some people might be interested in going right away and saying, I'm interested in all of the furniture ads. Or somebody might be saying, the first thing I'd like to look at is what they have in here in the way of food ads, a restaurant ads, or menswear ads, or automobile ads. And another one might be say, well, I wonder if there are any ads in there for Marshall Field. So we came up with a supplementary index that further indexes it by advertiser and by category.
So where is that?
That's a separate booklet.
Okay, it's this yellow booklet here in the back.
I believe 8.5x11.
Yeah, I see.
That's the reason that was created.
Okay, there we go. So you've got two indexes here.
Yeah, the one is bound in as part of the original course.
Right, I got you.
The other is basically a supplementary index.
Okay, very good. So it's a massive volume, but with the indexes you can find anything you want. I'm looking in the bound in index under the letter F.
Okay.
So you've got factors affecting ease of reading, facts of life, advertising, fail, ads do because of layout, if I don't speak fast, why ads fail, failure, a carpet ad, failure to tell enough, failures, layout, common, false teeth, farm ad,
yeah.
Fashions change.
Another use for that is somebody may have gone through it when they first got it and studied the course, and later on I remember there was that ad about false teeth in there. Where's that?
Yeah.
So there you got it right there in that index.
Very nice. You've got each part in this course has the part, the content, and at the end you have a test.
Oh, okay, a self-test.
Yeah, self-test.
Right.
Why was it designed with a self-test?
Well, it was to get the people involved so they could test themselves on how thoroughly they were grasping that lesson.
Okay, so this isn't just some course you're going to read through like a book. This is a serious study course.
This is a course that the real student will go back to again and again, and it should be not filed away in a bookshelf full of other marketing and advertising materials, but as a reference. It's almost like having Clyde right next to you in the same office. You have a problem, you ask him a question, and there's your answer.
Do you know how many different examples of ads are in here?
In the total course, there are 600 ads reproduced.
And are some of these ads very successful ads, winning ads?
Absolutely. The ads are in there to illustrate the particular points of that lesson. There are some pretty bad ads in there, and they are critiqued as to what's wrong with them. Then there are good ads that are successful ads that have utilized the principles, and there's commentary explaining this. Some of them are before and after exams. So you see before and then after. All of the ads have at least a brief commentary on their good or bad points, and some of them, actually quite a few, have specific sales results, actual sales figures.
I saw one in relation to the Honda motorcycle ads. Does that one ring a bell?
Yeah. I think that was from Eureka, California, if my memory is correct. I don't even know right now what part it's in. Do you have it in front of you?
I don't have the specific part. It had like six layouts. He was a distributor for Honda motorcycles.
Right.
There were six layouts of his new advertising that he produced as a result of going through
this course.
That
advertiser had mainly been advertising on television, and the newspaper wanted him to advertise in the newspaper, and the newspaper made up the ads for that advertiser, and the advertiser ran them, and they were so successful that they discontinued the TV, and that's how my dad conceded the course, to help newspapers go out with real selling ideas and advertising that would sell, rather than instead of going out, hey, why don't you advertise in our paper? And the people that studied this course, now these were not professional advertising creators. They were, in this Honda case, there was not an advertising agency that did those. It was not the Honda dealer that did those. It was some guy that had taken this course, learned to use these principles. So just imagine how it works for the guy who's not interested in writing ads for everybody, but is only interested in writing his own ad and can devote a lot of time or as much time as is necessary to perfect his own advertising.
How about the story about the guy in Nashville who sold refrigerators?
Oh, Joel Morris, yeah.
Who was this guy?
Oh, Joel, that's a great story. Joel Morris was a guy that ran a chain of credit-type furniture stores in and around Nashville, Tennessee. And my father had, and later myself, done work with the Furniture Association, National Home Furnishing Association. And Joel, I think, was on their board of directors and one of their most colorful and successful members. And he bought into this system and began to run this kind of advertising, the kind that my father teaches and that I do, and began to have big increases in his business. Now, this was before my father and I had started Basic. I was working at that time as advertising manager for the Wilson McMahon chain of furniture stores centered on Santa Barbara, California, which came to be regarded as the most successfully, best-run small cities chain of furniture stores in the country. And I always call these techniques direct response techniques applied to retail. the ads that I did for them looked more like mail order ads than retail ads. But in any event, I had developed ads for a television set or a washing machine and a refrigerator that was a large illustration with 20 or 30 call-outs on each side of it. Each call-out listing or naming a specific product point or benefit.
Okay.
And then some general copy at the bottom of the ad. And those ads sold appliances like you just wouldn't believe. And I was at that time exchanging ads. I had not met him at the time with Joel Morris, who knew me through my father and vice versa. And so Joel just basically copied that ad with full permission, of course. It worked in Nashville, Tennessee, the same way it worked in coastal California. That's the story of that ad.
I have here some notes that this ad, using some of the ideas or using that ad, sold in 1 week a carload of refrigerators. It won top awards. Does that ring a bell?
That illustration, I believe, is in the course.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, anything in there about results you can take to the bank. Joel became a great friend. I spent time in his home down there in Nashville, and his brother-in-law started a big warehouse type, a Levitt's type store in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Sprintz is his name. You don't have a copy of my 131 furniture ads, do you?
No, I do not. And a product you have?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
But in there, when we were running this copy department advertising service for one store in the city, we developed a unbelievably effective ad for selling leather sofas and chairs, leather furniture. Well, Charles had, in this new store, had a little leather gallery. And
what's a gallery?
Oh, that's like maybe one manufacturer will have, depending on the manufacturer, a great many pieces, or in this case, maybe six or eight.
Okay.
Sofas that are all displayed together with a selling sign of some kind.
And all right.
The showroom installed a Leathermates gallery in a prime location just inside the main entrance. Kickoff advertising consisted of a full color page and a beautifully printed color circular on slick paper. Photographs of the merchandise were luscious. The merchant, that was Charles Sprintz, had high expectations, but his hopes were quickly dashed. Despite his beautiful ad, results were almost nil. Perplexed, he called us for counsel. We told him that beautiful pictures alone can't sell furniture, or anything else for that matter, any more than beautiful merchandise can sell itself. Sell, in person or in print, requires words. Not words for the sake of words, the right words that fill stores with ready-to-buy prospects. Anyway, this is part of the commentary in this book. Then, what's interesting, we told him to run this genuine leather ad that we had written that is in part of his copy department service. And so he ran a vertical half-page ad, black and white, in the regular run of the paper. And this time, he had immediate sellout. 14 sofas, 2 love seats, 5 recliners, 6 chairs with ottomans. Same merchandise, the same prices, but professional salesmanship multiplied instead of just having pictures.
Wow. This is Michael Senoff with HardToFindSeminars.com. This is the end of part 2. I hope you're enjoying this detailed case history of Clyde Bedell, me interviewing his son, Barry Bedell. Please continue to part 3.